Okay, Shabtai Tzvi. We're rejoining Shabtai Tzvi. Tani, we're rejoining Shabtai Tzvi. He's back in Smyrna, his hometown. Izmir, Smyrna. He is going manic. He has gone manic. And when Shabtai Tzvi goes manic, that's when things get exciting. He had already been here, been in Smyrna, that is, for 3 months. Either right under or right around 3 exact Hebrew months. And he had been normal. I mean, of course, because it's post-Nathan of Gaza, he still thinks he's Mashiach, but he's not doing anything wild. Okay, he had a manic outbreak, Hanukkah time. Hanukkah, he has a manic outbreak. His first manic outbreak is, I wouldn't call it boring, but Kibbutz standard Shabtai Tzvi manic outbreak. He gets people to eat chelev, has to make matzah surim. That's what we call standard Shabtai Tzvi, outbreak. He comes into shul wearing royal garb. He has, some of his rabbinic supporters carrying his head. Everything looks relatively, this is like a little more than normal, but that's what we call Shabtai Tzvi, standard manic outbreak. So right around this time, as I said last week, the Rabbanim in Smyrna knew very well who Shabtai Tzvi was. They were quite aware of him. He grew up there, and he had been expelled 15 years earlier, which isn't that long. I mean, depending on how old you are, of course, but the Rabbanim in Smyrna weren't so young. Some were younger, but none were that young, and everyone knew exactly who he was. And they were somewhat perplexed about how to deal with him. And they had also gotten letters from the Rabbanim, from the rabbis of Constantinople, advising them to kill Shabtai Tzvi. And they weren't sure if they should. That's a very radical statement. In other words, it's easier said than done. And it wasn't that commonly given that you should go and kill somebody. But I mentioned the Rambam last week. Nigaris Taimon? No? Okay. The Rambam says Nigaris Taimon. There's some guy called Mitzvah Mashiach. The Rambam does advise killing. So it's not the idea.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned with the pool.
Yeah, I mentioned last week the traditional way in Eastern Europe to kill somebody was take him to a mitzvah and make sure they stay down. That's the traditional way done.
At least you die old.
You said there was someone.
One of my high school rabbis claims that his great grandfather did it to somebody. I don't know if it's true or not.
Are you over on killing that piece?
Well, it depends who the person is. Obviously, that's the whole point here. You don't issue a psak like this, like stam. I think he's a threat. You understand? There has to be someone who's an active threat to your life, so that he could be considered a rodef. And you definitely have to be a very, not really sure of yourself, but it's not simple. I don't think there's anyone today who would possibly clearly that someone's a rodef. Okay, fine. Rumors hit Shabtai Tzvi's followers, who are known as believers. Erev Shabbos. Dalet Tevis. That should be Gimel Tevis. Because I know whatever. The next. Okay. That the Rabbanim of Izmir want to kill Shabtai Tzvi. So, the followers of Shabtai Tzvi want to start chasing and attempting to kill some of the major enemies / kofrim enemies, opponents of Shabtai Tzvi, and they escape into Shul.
The enemies
escape into Shul. Okay, for whatever reasons, to Shul, to synagogue, to the Bet Knesset.
Prayer house.
Now, what happens is, this is nothing. Come on, guys. Now, I don't know, no one knows why nothing really happens in the next morning, but things quiet down overnight. I mean, they don't really have street lamps, etc., so, once it's dark, it's dark, and there's a limit to how much more can be done. Next morning, Shabtai Tzvi starts his actions. Radical.
What year?
The Radical. This is 1665. Radical Actions on Shabbos. Okay, he goes to his shul. He spends a very, very long time saying Pesukei Dezimra. A very long time saying Pesukei Dezimra. And then, what?
The guy, a long time? What's his name?
No, not that one. Not that one. He goes on to the shul of his opponents, of his enemies, who are in the Portuguese shul. They hear he's coming. They hear he's coming. And they lock and bolt the door.
Wait, what happens?
Okay. There's two shuls in town. Yeah. Of course, right? There's more. There's Smyrna was a big city, so it's more than that. But Shaftes was dominating in one shul with his supporters. And his enemies are dominating the Portuguese shul. The Rabbanim, most of the Rabbanim, he had some rabbinic followers, but the man, the best and most of the Rabbanim of Smyrna were opposing him. And they were dominating, in quotes, the Portuguese shul. And unfortunately, they hear the Shaftes is coming. So they lock and bolt the door. Shabtai Tzvi gets to the shul. He sees the door is locked and bolted. Do you know what he does?
Time for the window.
Call what?
Window?
Better. He calls for an axe and he personally chops the door open.
On Shabbos?
On Shabbos!
Not to your servants.
There you go.
Not only that, the Chol Shabbos is the only like instance that it says specifically in the Torah that it is like someone was killed for the Chol Shabbos. Yeah.
Okay. Now, they started dominating a little later. They were in the middle of Nishmas. And Shabtai Tzvi interrupts them to give them a very long schmooze, very long speech. He says, do you know why he broke the door down on Shabbos? Still Shabbos, right? No, it's not still Shabbos. Eis Nasel Sashem Hepar Tarasa. Sometimes that's a pasuk in Kehelis. Eis Nasel, there's a time for Hashem break his Torah. Okay, whatever. He's very grossly misapplying that idea. But he wanted to break the door down. Because he was breaking klippas. You know what klippas are for?
Barriers.
Okay, barriers, that's right. It's breaking down the spiritual barriers, that's why he's doing it.
Rabbi, he basically compared himself to God by using the pasuk.
Well, he's compared for you've already forgot. Yosef, how has he signed his name already? Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Shabtai Tzvi. I mean, the guy's done. He has to go manic. That's all manic in the right circumstances, and he's gonna do things like this. Okay, he calls in the four of his rabbinic opponents, the four tame animals in the Torah. Do we know what the four tame animals are?
Sure.
No. Four tame animals.
Gamal,
Chazir,
Ed,
and Shafan. Shafan. Okay, those are the four. Yeah, those are kind of rabbits and hares. Shafan, Gamal is camel, and Chazir is pig. So he calls his four rabbinical opponents those four animals, and specifically, he calls Reb Chaim Ben Avista, who was one of the main two chief rabbis. He calls him camel.
I guess they're arguing.
Yeah, no, it's not ugly, it's an issue of calling him Tumma. I mean, he was saying there are covers that they're you know, fountains of Tumma, that's what he's trying to say. Because I'll give you an example. This is like, that's what I told Rabbi Meir. Shabtai Tzvi, what's interesting about Shabtai Tzvi is, he's not Torah, but he's like, thinks he's Torah. So anyway, the four Malchios are also compared to the four Tumma animals. Okay? The Arba Malchus are also compared to the four tummy animals. The only one I remember offhand is Edom, is called Chazir. I don't know what Greece is called, face or whatever. The idea that the four tummy animals listening to Torah and Koros and Tumah, that's an idea which exists in mainline normal places. He, of course, is like Ki'ilu taking out of context and applying to his rabbinic opponents, which is Ki'ilu, his Kiddush over here. Okay, so, of course, one of the questions they had for him was, you say you're Mashiach ben David, what happened to Mashiach ben Yosef? So anyone remembers what he said about Pesach?
He said like maybe he's coming, like one of his followers, like is he killed already?
Okay. So he says, oh, you guys don't know. I had a Talmud from Zalman. He died in Takpatad, he was Mashiach ben Yosef. Which, whatever, you know, we've commented on that already. And not only that, he says, Akel Mali Rachamim, he says, Hashkava, Akel Mali Rachamim, praising Rabbi Avraham Zalman, and gets into it very much. Probably seems a very nice song. I'm not really in the housing type. If we could get Moody back for a little while, we could have another scene as Akel Mali Rachamim.
You
agree
with that?
Moody, some of them. You know, those Chazanish things. I don't know, I'm not going to attempt. But proper professional chazanim sing things like this. So one thing Shabtai Tzvi knew how to do well was sing. Okay, so he says a Kel Barachim Hashkava for Avraham Zalman, the supposed Mashiach ben Yosef. And then he goes on to sing one of his favorite songs. There's a favorite song called Meli Selda.
What?
Meli Selda. Meli Selda is a Spanish romance poem song about the daughter of the emperor whose name is Meli Selda, and about someone who has an affair with the daughter of the emperor whose name is Meli Selda.
He sings this in Shul?
Yes! He sings it in Shul!
Do people understand Spanish?
Yes, do people understand Spanish? Definitely! Because almost everyone, not almost everyone, let's say at least 40, if not over 60% of the Portuguese shul, let's say 80%, were Yotze Sfard, and they spoke a language called what?
Ladino.
What's Ladino? Ladino is Jewish Castilian. Okay? So yes, they're all quite aware, they all understood Spanish well, and he sang this song, Meli Selda. And he got very into so the eyewitnesses say when he sang about himself, like, you want me to read some of the words?
Sure.
Now let's see if I can find it. Just wait a second. This is translation in English. To the mountains I ascended, to the river I descended. Meli Selda I met there, the king's daughter, bright and fair. Then I saw the shining lass as she came up from the bath. Her arched brow dark as the night, her face a gleaming sword of light, her lips corals red and bright, her flesh so as milk, so white and so fair and white.
Maybe it's like share, like a metaphor.
Very good. Yosef is thinking. Yosef's a regular here, and he knows how to think Shabtai Tzvi. Yes, definitely. Shabtai Tzvi said, I am married to the Torah. Right? He's married to the Torah. And the Torah is key with the king's daughter.
There you go.
And because he's married to manic Shabtai Tzvi, there's only so many questions in world. At a certain point, we say, no more questions on manic Shabtai Tzvi. Okay. That's right. So this is his big famous, this, he says this, you know, he darshans how he's ki'ilu married to the Torah, and that's why he sings about Meli Selda, and that it's a very spiritual song and very deep. And then he tops things off, because Shabtai Tzvi is super manic. He tops things off and saying that he's going to redeem everybody, redeem the Jewish people, by Tess Vav Sivan and Tuf in the next year. In other words, 1666. And that's very atypical Shabtai Tzvi. A typical Shabtai Tzvi very rarely. Nathan, the Nazar of Gaza, he issues prophecies. Shabtai Tzvi usually doesn't. This is the one and only case where Shabtai Tzvi gives a definite date. When I am going to redeem the Jewish people by this date. Yes, I will. You heard it here. Read my lips. Okay.
No new taxes.
What? That's right, no new taxes. Okay, so Reb Chaim ben Avista was in Shul, and he says, he asked Shabtai Tzvi, prove that you're really Mashiach. Which, of course, as we've noted, is standard. You know, that is what you're supposed to do. In other words, if someone claims they're a prophet, then there's a big mahok as we showed them on how they're supposed to do it, but everyone agrees that they have to prove it. You can't just, if you say you're a prophet, so let's say you say you're a prophet, very good, so let's prove you're a prophet, and let's see if it's true. Shabtai Tzvi goes wild. And he says, I don't have to prove I'm Mashiach. Puts Reb Chaim ben Avista in Cherem. Threatens that he's going to feed him camel flesh because he's a camel. And he's going to prove now that he's Mashiach. You know, Shabtai Tzvi proves he's Mashiach. Okay, just in Shabtai Tzvi, he calls people up and asks them to do what?
So that's how your name.
Say Shem of Mamonash, very good! Very good. That proves it! Yeah, how does that prove it? I don't. I can actually explain it, but I don't think I should.
No, please.
So what did they do?
He calls him up and has him say Shem of Mamonash.
Oh, that's not good.
Okay. How does that prove it? Kashabtai, his whole delusion was the reason why you can't say Shem of the Farish Kachsavo is because we're in Golos, because we're in exile. But when we'll be in Golos, then you can't say it. It's a krum, it's a misinterpretation of a Gemara. So therefore, if he's Mashiach, then you could say Shem of the Farish.
But that's not actually how you understand it. Really.
No, that's definitely not how we understand it.
The point goes, that's the same.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
Which one did you say?
The four-letter standard way. Okay. Now, they go on after his drasha. And say, no. And they say Mizmori Tilim for a very long time until they get past Montefila.
That's great.
Right? Shabtai Tzvi says, you guys are putter from davening today.
I like this.
Yeah. I told you it was worth coming today. And he says, he pulls out a chorosh out of his pocket. Yeah, no, again, don't ask me too many questions on how it got there. He takes it out of his pocket and says, this chumash, my own chumash, is holier than your Sefer Torah.
Ah.
And we're going to read out of this today.
Oh, it sounds like a plan.
Okay. He calls up a lot of people to the Torah, including both of his brothers.
Oh.
He declares that one of his brothers, let's see if I have his name here. They were well-meaning. His older brother, I forgot to remember his name. He declares his older brother king of Turkey, and his second brother he declares king of Rome. Doesn't bother calling any kahanim a levim, which, for the records, is against mikra mefurish, explicit pasuk in Tanakh. It says explicitly that the kahanim, will there always be kahanim even in Yimus of Mashiach. But whatever, you know, again, as we say, there's only so many questions one can ask on Manor Chapter 3. He also calls women to the Torah. Okay. Now, as long as we're on that topic.
Was the Reform movement around yet?
No. Well before the Reform movement. For the historical record, that's what I told Rabbi Meir wants to know. I'm spending so much time on Shabtai Tzvi. The truth is, it's such an interesting historical topic. How can I not spend so much time on it, right, Yossi? But the facts are, is that the second or third version of Sabbateanism, Yaakov Frank and his followers, you heard of him? Okay, so the fallout of Yaakov, many women historians believe the fallout of Yaakov Frank is the early Reform movement. It's not mamish, an absolute historical progression, but there's definitely a connection to Yaakov Frank. We're not going to get to Yaakov Frank this year.
Does he call him his wife?
Okay, just wait a second. I will tell you. We'll get to Yaakov Frank in a moment. We'll get to Yaakov Frank in a moment.
Does he call his fish child?
No. The fish child is. Maybe he calls up someone who shares the same, you know, Sharsh and Neshama as his fish child. But
the fish child snifter.
No. Well, the question is about does his soul live on? And it's very possible that it does, at least in Shabtai Tzvi's eyes. Okay, now, as has been alluded to other times, and we're going to circle around a little bit today, to either today, if not, we won't finish this week, we'll hit some of it next week. Later Sabbateanism, and Yaakov Frank is the classic example, is notorious for cultic sin. That was clear enough. Do I have to be clear? Yeah. I have to be clear. You see what I mean?
Like the Apple White Theorem thing?
Like what?
The Apple White Theorem.
The question is in terms of Shabtai Tzvi, how much existed how early? I mean, at later points in his life, there's more, you know, solid proof that he engaged in, you know, moral laxness or immoralities. At this point of his life, it's not quite as clear. It's definitely up to debate.
No, it's not.
We'll get to that in a moment. Okay, we'll get to something similar in a moment. Okay. There are the rumors at this point of Shabtai Tzvi encouraging minimally mixed dancing.
Wow.
Which is pretty bad. The mixed dancing is, you know, again, it's definitely wrong. It's not quite, you know, Yaakov Frank and what he did, but it definitely leads to it. There's also very strong rumors going around now that Shabtai Tzvi, as we should hopefully remember, he was married twice to different women in Smyrna and was unable to consummate the marriage. So the rumors say that he was socializing with his former wives, which, again, you know, whatever, but more than that, he was miyachad, he went, you know, in a private room with one of his former wives. The woman didn't say more than that, but, you know, you're definitely not allowed to do that. They were both remarried at this point. They were both remarried, well, probably had children from other people at this point. Yeah. We're going to see, we'll get back to this in a little while, as you see. Just wait a second. Am I missing anything here? Okay. Fine. So that's his big Shabbos in Shul. That's Shabbat Tzvi's big Shabbos in Shul.
Do they sponsor Kiddush?
That's a hard question. Not, there's a lot recorded historically, but that one's not. Okay. Now, as you can well imagine, at this point, up until this Sunday, this faithful Shabbos in Smyrna. And I'm not going to be able to answer your questions after I say it, but I'm warning you that I'm not going to be able to answer them already. Smyrna Izmir was very, very strongly divided into followers, believers of Shabtai Tzvi, and people who were calling them opponents, Kofrim, people who rejected Shabtai Tzvi. Major war, social war going on in Smyrna. Now, I don't really understand why, but after Shabtai Tzvi's manic outbreak on the Shabbos, almost the entire town converts to believing in Shabtai Tzvi.
Very good.
Yeah, I don't totally understand it. Okay, we'll get to Reb Chaim Ben Avista in a minute. We'll get to Reb Chaim Ben Avista. That's one of the we'll just wait. We have to go step by step here, step by step, because as mentioned, we have there's at least five different reports of what happened there. So, you know, it's we know a lot from eyewitness account. We're not dealing with, you know, things which are written down years later, et cetera, et cetera. We have five more or less eyewitnesses. So we have a pretty good idea what's going on. Okay. Sunday, there were two rebuttals. Again, there were two rebuttals in Smyrna, Reb Aaron Lefafa and Reb Chaim Ben Avista. Reb Chaim Ben Avista, as we said last week, or it was the week before, was really there originally. Possibly one tends to believe he was a poor politician. So they brought in Reb Aaron Lefafa to be the chief rabbi, to be co-chief rabbi. So Reb Aaron Lefafa in the Beis Din on Sunday, after they hear about Shabtai Tzvi axing the door down, they say he's Mechal Shabbos. They attempt to call the Beis Din to reprimand him and put him in his place. But as Shabtai Tzvi apparently has such widespread report, Shabtai Tzvi doesn't even bother coming to Beis Din. And after this point, you'll see what happens the next day. Something else on Sunday. Yeah, this is also quite mysterious. In the middle of Shabtai Tzvi's outbreaks on Sunday, he either goes to the Turks or he's called to the Turks. And this may be a major difference. because he's declared himself a Shia, and he appointed his brother, king of Turkey, king of Constantinople, that is an absolute open rebellion. And as I mentioned last week, Turks, the Ottomans would kill their own brothers because of suspected rebellion, and it's definitely dangerous to do something like that in Turkey. That's definitely a dangerous thing to do. So there's different, you know, the sources are not in agreement amongst with each other. If Shabtai Tzvi is called in to the Qadi, called into the Turkish official, the Turkish judge, and asked to, you know, explain his actions, was he being accused of rebellion? Or that's one version. And the Maminim, the Shabtai Tzvi believers, that's how they report it. But others report the other way around, that Shabtai Tzvi was so mad at his rabbinical opponents, that he went to the Qadi, the Turkish judge, and accused them of rebelling against Turkish authorities. Got it? Two different versions.
Can it be both?
No, I don't think so. The first version makes the most logical sense. The second version only makes sense because Shabtai Tzvi's manic. If the man wasn't manic, his opponents, he claims he's Mashiach, he's going to depose the Turks, he's going to depose the Ottoman Emperor. And he goes and says his opponents who aren't accepting him are rebelling against the Turks. The only way you could do that is if you're in Manik Shabtai Tzvi. Normal logic doesn't allow that.
I'm saying Manik Shabtai Tzvi could be called in to come in and saying, hey, you're rebelling. No, it's not me, it's them. It's them.
No.
Kill them.
Okay. That version doesn't exist. That is a theoretical possibility, but there's no historical evidence for it. Okay, so nothing happens. What happens is Shabtai Tzvi goes into the Qadi, and nothing happens. And of course, the Sabbatean believers say the reason why is he walked in and light went all around his body. And the Qadi was gripped with fear. This is a man of God. I can't touch him. That's what the Sabbatean believers say. But what really happened, of course, everyone wants to know, something had to happen. And he definitely went to the Qadi. Everyone knows he went to the Turkish judge and he got out. So how did he get out? So there's two basic possibilities.
Insanity plea.
Okay. One's not insanity plea. One's complete insane. If you're manic Shabtai Tzvi, you are insane. And as I mentioned last week about how the Turks respect insane people, Ottoman Muslims. That was here, that was Night Center, that was somewhere else.
It was not
here last week. It was okay. It's a well known fact that the Muslims give insane people respect. We're aware of that? I told you guys the two different names, what they call. No, that was here. No. There's two different terms they use. There's two different terms the Muslims use for someone who's crazy. One of them is Majnun. One of them is Majnun. And the other one? I did this last week. Okay. The other one is Ibn Lilith. You too.
Son of Lilith.
Son of Lilith. Who's Lilith?
The first wife of Adam.
And what happened? What happened?
She didn't want to be controlled.
Yes, she wants. She wants.
Yeah, and what's the result of the
baby snatchers?
Not baby snatchers.
She kills.
No. She's the mother of Shaitan.
Is she married?
She's the mother. She is the mother of the Shaitan.
Is this a Jewish?
Yes.
Idea.
Is this a Jewish idea? You're asking a question. You're asking a question I can't give you a 1 second answer on.
So is this
one
accepted?
Of his brothers used to drive me crazy about it.
Is this accepted? Is this an accepted idea?
I'm going to repeat it again. It's really confusing when I have both of you guys talking about his brothers. It was Rafi, actually.
Yeah.
It's a complex. The is mentioned in the Midrashim on and off. I did not do what I call substantial work on it to give a real definition to it. Okay? But nonetheless, Muslims consider Lilith as the mother of a shaitan, and they think someone who is crazy is possessed by a shaitan.
That's a good thing.
And as a result, you don't want to start up with the demons, do you? So don't start up with crazy people either. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is this. You know what this means?
Money. They don't know how to snap.
No. That wasn't bad. For Uri Pilmas, that was a six. Okay. The other possibility is Shabitsky's supporters gave a lot of bribes to the Turkish authorities, and that's why they released Shabitsky. Either way, Sunday he has this encounter with the Turkish authorities, and he's released. Now we're on to Monday.
Monday.
Monday, we know. It's the time of Kriyas HaTorah, long Talmud, etc., etc. And there are people who even fast on every Monday and Thursday, couples, kind of people, do things like that. Right? Bahab, that's right. Okay. Shabtai Tzvi declares that this Monday is his Shabbos!
Oh,
okay, I told you this is
Monday or Sunday night.
That's a good question. Now you ask, now you're being a Lavin. It was Shabtai Tzvi, you have to be also a Lavin, because even though he's funny, I mean, wigs have good question. Did he light the Shabbos candles? Did he have his wife light the Shabbos candles? Possible. We're not sure. That part's not reported.
Wait, his wife? Is he married to a real woman also?
Yes, he's married to a real woman also. We'll get to her.
Oh, so we went against Rebbe
Gershom. We're going to get to her. We'll get to her.
That was
right.
Only against two women.
No, I think we'll get to that next. Okay, fine. So Shabtai Tzvi declares Monday is my Shabbos. I mean, I'm not sure how many questions we're supposed to ask on Shabtai Tzvi. That's like a theme that, you know, I don't know, why exactly, I mean, why did he declare this as Shabbos? So, you have two possibilities here. Either he was feeling bad about this little Shabbos he just did, and he wants to make it up.
Also, got added another Shabbos.
That's right.
That makes sense.
Or possibly he's so happy escaping the Turkish authorities, he has to have a Shabbos to. Within halachic Judaism. Shabtai Tzvi is out sort of on his own, in his own unique way.
Are we saying that Monday night starts Shabbos?
The question was already asked. The question was asked, it's a good and legitimate question, and the answer is I'm not sure. I would guess to make it, I mean, one sort of has to assume. One sort of has to assume that he did it, you know, in a normal fashion, or as normal celebrity, and he started this supposed Shabbos Sunday night. And we had this, guys, remember when we had this one already?
Which one?
This idea of changing times?
With Pesach?
He celebrated all three of them in one week.
Yes.
He's done that already. He does that another time later in his life. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so, whatever. Yeah, something
along those lines. Cheesecake.
Yeah, I don't know. Cheesecake's probably a new idea. But anyway, so this is definitely a life thing for Shabtai Tzvi. This is a life thing for Shabtai Tzvi. He does it on and off here and there. So he does it again. Okay. The other major event on Monday. The other major event on Monday is Reb Chaim Benavista changes his mind. In other words, we saw originally that Reb Chaim Benavista was an active opponent of Shabtai Tzvi. And Shabtai Tzvi called him a camel. He called him a gabal. And he said, you're a camel, and I'm going to make you eat camel. Now, for some very unclear reason, which everyone agrees is unclear, that means standard historians also not sure about it, Reb Chaim Benavista changes his mind and says, yes, Shabtai Tzvi is Mashiach. Okay, the big question, of course, is why does he change his mind for? What happened? Okay, there's two things going on. one thing going on, and this is what Gershon Shalom goes around and has a lot of fun with, is as mentioned earlier, there is this clear, deep community politics between Reb Chaim Ben Avista and the leaders of the community. Very clear communal politics, even though he was competent, able, etc., etc. After when Yosef Iskafa died, he was not given over. He should, in other words, he should have become the chief rabbi, but he wasn't. He didn't. He was not given all the rights. And they attempted to find someone, and they couldn't find anybody, etc., etc., until they found Reb Aaron Safa, not much before this. That's no question that's true. There's no question that there was deep community politics involved, and I don't think that you can honestly completely discount them from what's going on over here. But I don't know how respectful it is to talk about it, but whatever. Anyway, that is one thing that's going on. The other thing going on is there's definitely mob violence involved. And I don't remember. I would not be able to find it in the middle of this year, but there's definitely is an idea amongst followers of Shabtai Tzvi that they have the rights to kill their opponents if necessary. Okay, the traditionalist, the traditionalist approach is to say that Reb Chaim Ben Avista felt he was. His life was in danger, and because he's Pekuch Nevesh, he felt he's allowed to recognize Shabtai Tzvi as Mashiach. That is a traditionalist approach. Okay, now, Donny is being a real Mitzvah Shalamdan, and he wants to know, is this Mamish Mutter or not? In other words, we know that there's Gibel Leiris Chamuris, and Shabtai Tzvi going against them. If he's going against something, in other words, if that goes down here, let's go through it, you know, quickly, without proper ego. If the rumors of him consorting and encouraging immoral behavior are true, then you can start discussing that maybe it's against the Gimel Neres Chamuris. That's A. It's unclear, A, if that's true. And B is unclear the parameters of how far he's going with it. Okay? That's A, B. The real issue is was it clear to, I mean, it's to us it's very clear. This is like the theme of Shabtai Tzvi. To us it's very clear that Shabtai Tzvi and Nathan and Gaza were instituting a new religious concept which completely undermines all of Torah. Was that absolutely clear to people at the time? In other words, because if that's true, it's definitely Arab Aliyah. Was that clear to people at the time? So that gets back to the problem that not Nathan of Gaza was, you know, as Yosef said, chief instigator and chief villainier. But it's more than that. He's tricky. You don't understand. The guy was brilliant and had a lot of normal rebuttal convinced that he's right. He had a lot of normal people. He had a lot of normal people convinced that he was right for a long time after he died. Right, partially right, etc., etc., etc. So that is the background music is yes. We look with 20/20 hindsight and say yes, this guy was definitely off, etc., etc., etc. At the time, it wasn't so clear. Nonetheless, the minimum, as the Rambam would say. So when something's Yarek Val Yavor and you're supposed to be over and you don't, then you're an onus. You're not going to be punished for it. You're an onus. If in fact the mob violence was at a level that Reb Chaim Ben Avista's life was in danger, then yeah, he would. I mean, I don't know if he'd be allowed because that's a good question, but he certainly is at most an onus for going along with the, you know, Sabbatean mob. Okay. Now, I personally would theorize that the, you know, if you don't, we don't know, no one really knows, but the most logical theory is that some of Shabtai Tzvi's rabbinic supporters, who may have even been in touch with Nathan of Gaza, managed to convince Reb Chaim ben Avista, that it's minimally a possibility. And they convinced a lot of other people also. I don't know, it's not like, I mean, whatever. It's they convinced a lot of big people that Shabbat is Mashiach. So it's not a pella, it's not impossible to convince another person. Of course, the key point is sort of like this. After Shabtai Tzvi apostates, and we'll definitely do that, there is the reaction. And again, you would think that the reaction should be, if the guy apostated, he's certainly not Mashiach. That's what you would think, but that's not what happened.
Yeah, I don't see how...
You don't understand it, I don't totally understand myself either, but that's the facts. I'm reporting facts now historically. There are a lot of people, the real believers, believed in them until they died. Many people, a lot of people took their time to change their minds. Reb Chaim ben Avista, more or less, from what we know, almost immediately after Shabtai Tzvi apostated, he quit Shabtai Tzvi. So that definitely supports the idea that Reb Chaim ben Avista felt his life in danger and went on with the mob to save his life, or to get himself out of a lot of danger. Either way, you know, that only is a historical support to the idea of saying,
what? Is it posthumous?
He converted to Islam. Okay. Now the communal result of Reb Chaim ben Avista recognizing Shabtai Tzvi as Mashiach is that Shabtai Tzvi deposed Rabbi Aaron Lefafa, who was still opposing him as chief rabbi, and said Rabbi Chaim ben Avista should be the only chief rabbi of Smyrna. That's definitely true. That definitely happened. And the next day, he made everyone in the town come to Rabbi Chaim ben Avista and kiss his hand, which is, as you know, like as we know, that's a very traditional Smarty way to say hello and accept the rabbi's authority as kissing his hand. Okay, around this time... What? Rabbi slap people.
That's a good one.
That's right. If you ask him a cute question, he gives you a slap. Okay. Yeah, that's right. So, around this time, the phrase was initiated and some attributed to Rabbi Chaim ben Avista that Shabtai Tzvi is the true Mashiach, Mashiach Amiti, Huflo Acher. That phrase. And you think the phrase, if he is a true Mashiach, he and no other. You think that phrase is innocuous, not that important. It's a very important phrase for the greater Sabbatean history, because the phrase, even whether Reb Chaim ben Avista meant the phrase or not, is not so important. That phrase was embedded and becomes part of Sabbatean belief. That is a key component of Sabbatean belief. There's Shabtai Tzvi, Mashiach, and no one else.
Are there other people claiming to be Mashiach at that time?
No. Well, the question is going to be what happens after he apostates, what happens after he dies, etc., etc. So if you hold Shabtai Tzvi, let me, but if you hold Shabtai Tzvi, Mashiach, Huvlo Acher, then, and you bring other supposed Kabbalistic proof to that, then you're now turning, you're turning everything on this supposed point, which is going to make major ramifications and reverberations throughout, the next, let's say, 100 or so years of Jewish history. So it's important to realize that this phrase, Mashiach Amiti V'Acher, started right now. And let's see if we can do this on the spot. The one of the reasons why Shabtai, why it became part of 17 belief, is because Shabtai Tzvi liked the phrase a lot. You know what he liked the phrase?
Acher is Jesus.
No. Better. You have to know how to think Sabbatean. I don't know if you guys, we haven't done this much part of Sabbateanism yet, but the Gematria.
I love doing the Gematria.
There you go. The Gematria of Mashiach Amiti Vlo Acher equals the Gematria of Shabtai Tzvi. Shabtai Tzvi is really into Gematria. Like we had, you know, we had some Shaptek Su 17 Gematrias. So this is another one. And we're not done with 17 Gematrias, Rosh Hashanah, etc., etc. We're going to find some more interesting ones as we go on. We're going to call it here. And just know that next week, I think this week's going to be, you know, take the cake, but next week might. So fine.